Hello and welcome to what is the 186th episode of the... What?
186?
Yeah, 186.
We've jumped. Have we jumped 50?
No, we 186th episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Al Coates, and like a phoenix from the ashes of one of his many cruise disasters, Scott Cassin-Rennie.
Thank you for that lovely introduction, Coatesy.
Where the hell have you been?
London, because we're actually in the same room.
We are. Look, here, look, chink some glasses. Yeah.
There you go. We are in the same room for a change.
For
first
a year.
Time, well, over a year, you reckon. You reckon last January was the last time that we were in the same...
Yeah.
Breathing the same air?
Absolutely. It's a long time since we were together in the same same place. So I think that's quite special, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely, yes.
Why are we here today, though? Why did we kind of coincide? I'm looking at my dials.
You are, sorry. I know you're busy twiddling knobs.
I'm twiddling my knobs in the corner.
So this all
normally, when we're not in the same room, so you can't see me twiddling my knobs.
Knobs. Yes, and to be fair, it's not a great sight when you're doing it. It's actually quite stressful watching you play with your knobs.
How I've maintained my registration, I just don't know.
No, this is
it's
just,
like carry on social
this is just
work.
For fun. Today came about because the Consortium of Voluntary Adoption Agencies invited you to go to the launch of their new 3-year strategy, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I got the hump.
The good grace of my heart, I copied you in the reply so that I knew you would get the hump.
So I challenged their new CEO, who is a friend of the show. Satwinder or Sandhu. And I said, "Oi, Satwinder, what's going on here?"
And he was deeply...
he was quite embarrassed.
Deeply embarrassed.
I did shame him, actually, which is not my style, as a rule. So I got an invite and I thought, well, I have to go now.
That backfired somewhat, didn't it?
Because I did that at another event last year, didn't I? For the Adoption UK barometer launch.
Oh, yes.
Because you got an invite to that. And I went, hello. And then he went, oh, well, of course. You know, it's a podcast. But because, you know, Al Coates MBE.
Al, Adoption Celebrity MBE.
So I came today and I thought, well, I'll just have a couple of days over, go and see the granddaughter as well, you know. So
that's good.
Why we're here.
That's perfect. It's been a busy week, actually, in adoption world, because I think that the... I just found out today that the adoption strategy for Adoption England has been released. I've not had a chance to look at it, but I will put a link to it, and maybe we'll get Sarah Johal to come on
that
and talk about it.
That would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
Is that why she was ambling and kind of elbowing us today?
I don't know.
To be fair, we had a few of them today, didn't we?
Do you think?
There's a few high flyers today coming over, talking to us.
Well, I think we get a bit silly when we're in the same room together.
I disagree completely.
No, because it doesn't happen very often, so we're a bit like high on the endorphins.
We did sit in the front row and we were heckling, but no, we didn't.
Throwing plastic cups at the speakers when they weren't to our liking. We'll start with today, and then I was at the DfE, the Adoption Reference Group, on Monday, so maybe I could give you some feedback from that, because I know that
cuts deep.
That is another blow to your delicate ego.
Sacked, thrown out.
Yep.
Security pass taken. Not even a bind or a leave.
Yep, not even a...
Not even a thank you.
Not even a thank you.
No.
But
anyway,
you're not bitter. No, you are bitter.
Not at all.
Lean into
it. Well, I am. Yeah, I am.
So, the CVA, if people don't know, who are the CVA?
So, they're the Consortium of Voluntary Adoption Agencies.
Yes.
So, they are... Consortium of Voluntary Adoption Agencies.
And people come for the deep insight.
Yeah, I know, and I'm full of it, aren't I? So agencies like, and just off the top of my head, Adoption Focus, as an example, maybe Adoption Plus used to be, I'm not sure if they still are, because they no longer do assessments and placements.
Adoption Counts, we saw Anna Sharkey.
Yeah, yes, well, she's Adoption Focus, not Adoption Counts. Adoption
Counts,
an RAA. Yeah.
See,
my knowledge is still here.
I know, they've all got adoption in the name, though. That's what confuses me.
Who else? I think Coram may be a member as well.
Yeah.
Because they're, so it's basically, it's almost like a thing for, well, it is a thing for voluntary adoption agencies. This is going
It's like a trade organisation, isn't it? But they represent them.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So, and of and we've talked about this today, we talked about that as well, and kind of the last few years have kind of gone a bit quiet. They're doing different things, and I think their strategy has now changed again. But when I was at Adoption UK, we were members, and I used to go to all their events on behalf of Adoption UK, and they were, you know, they were really, they used to kind of run quarterly kind of...
You went on a boat trip, didn't you?
I did.
They ran a boat. They got the leaders together.
Were you invited to that?
Oh, shut up. I mean, it was next door to my house and they didn't even invite me to it. Anyway, we're not bitter.
But, yeah, they used to do events where they brought everybody together. They would have like a couple of days of kind of strategizing, discussion what the issues were for the voluntary sector. And bear in mind, this was when the RAs were starting to form as well. So there was a lot of kind of issues with how is a voluntary adoption agency going to survive beyond that regional...
But didn't some join into regions?
Exactly, and that's where kind of all those ideas came from. And the CVAA actually represented the agencies, the DfE, in terms of regionalisation and stuff. So they've done some amazing work over the years.
Didn't they, so put my cast of my mind back to the, not Maggie, who was the previous CEO, but the one prior to that was
Annie Crombie,
mm-hmm. who came on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But she was the secretary. So this is where it gets all interlinked. So people just think, oh, adoption. But so this is where it's interlinked. You've got they were the secretariat for the Adopter Reference Group. So they were totally embedded as an organisation into adoption on a national strategic level.
So that's what they used to. And, you know, we briefly talked to Satwinder today. And, you know, I was very honest. It's great to see them... starting to build a presence again. I mean, I'm sure they've been doing stuff.
Pandemic. Yeah. In all fairness to Maggie, gets the job and the pandemic kicks in, which is a bit...
So it was great to see. And obviously, we didn't hear too much about the strategy, but there's certainly a few things that kind of stood out in terms of what they want to achieve and who they want to achieve for. So, you know, we listened to two adult adoptees, I don't know what they're calling themselves.
Yeah, there's an adoptive parent as well, wasn't there?
An adoptive parent as well. The chair of the CVA as
well. Who's adopted himself,
So, you know, there's quite a few things in there, but the things that I pulled out from it really was there's kind of this, there was a discussion about transracial kind of adoption as well, that's coming through. And, you know, not being funny, Satwinder isn't a white person like you and I,
he's a man.
That may well be that something that he has kind of been focusing in on over the years through his work, because he's not just appeared out of nowhere to be the CEO of CVA. He was
a man walking down the street.
Yeah, exactly. Can you come and do the show? No, he was the CEO of IAC, which is now part of Quorum, and we promised him we'll get him back because we want to talk about his new role, but we also want to know. I want to know what happened with IEC and why it's gone into Quorum.
Well, that's a good question. Well, I can maybe ask you the question, but we should ask Sat as well, because I see this online when a lot of prospective adopters are asking in forums. They're going, we're at the beginning of our journey of adoption, and we've got VAs, voluntary adoption agencies, and we've got regional adoption agencies. What's the difference? Uh-huh. Why should we choose one over the other? And we had a really interesting conversation, and so I'll ask you again. What would, if you were to choose now at the beginning of your journey, what would you choose?
Well, first thing is it's great that you've got the opportunity to be able to ask that question now, because that was never a thing back in the day, lad. But, I didn't know what a voluntary adoption agency was when we went through the process.
Absolutely, good point.
However,
you just went through yellow pages.
Yeah, you just went to a local authority and went, Kai, can we, you know, can we, what do we do? How do we, you know, how do we sign up? I don't know. I don't want to make it as blunt as that, but, you know,
a lot of people do that. They ring up and they go, we're thinking of adoption. What the hell do we do?
Yeah. So that's the first thing. But the second thing, and yes, if I had my time over, it would have been a voluntary adoption agency.
So, and I agree, I have exactly the same feelings. Why? That's the question.
Well, there's two reasons why. Three, actually.
Forget you.
We may be here a long time.
And another thing.
Now, the first thing I have to say, because I do know that some of my social workers do listen to this podcast. It's not about the social workers.
No, not at all.
Right, because they're amazing. I think it's the red tape and the bureaucracy that comes with adopting through a local authority.
Yeah.
You're so aware of it. Whereas, and you know, this one of the second reasons with a voluntary agency, they do kind of not necessarily hide that from you, but they deal with that. So a voluntary agency are very open and honest. You know,
yeah.
I take a my good time one, yeah. Adoption Plus as an example. Very kind of high level in need children that they were looking for families for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were always very open and honest. And, you know, the number of people, the number of couples or people that they used to approve was very small. It was only a small number. You were talking maybe 2-3 a year sometimes because right. It was for specific needs of yeah. children. However, those people were promised and still continue to be supported until they don't need it anymore,
yeah.
if at all, kind of, if you know, that kind of way. So that's the second reason. And the third reason is, I think because I know the sector now, the voluntary sector now and know how passionate they are, you know, you do have a number of local authority workers actually go and work for voluntary agencies because yeah. of the passion that they have, and they can see the value in working for a voluntary agency. And the third reason is because when we fostered, we went through a private agency. I didn't want to go through the local authority because of our experience of adopting through them.
But you did. I mean, you didn't have a particularly unpleasant experience, did you?
No, I wouldn't say we did. But I think that, you know, you have to bear in mind it was early days. Law had just changed for same-sex couples. I think that whilst it was, they were legally required to take inquiries and do assessment. They hadn't done it. And secondly, they hadn't really prepared themselves for it, so their language was all wrong. And,
yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know.
So they were learning as they went.
Yeah, pretty much. They yeah. pretty much were.
Yeah.
We had an independent social worker who was fantastic. She passed away last year, actually. But we had an independent social worker assessing us who was very kind of, she was our advocate. She was massive. Yeah. You know, she challenged. She worked in the voluntary sector.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, however, I will say that, you know, a lot of the social workers we met, and I'm talking about the generation, my generation social workers, so, you know, people who are now in their early 40s, late 30s. mid-40s, let's say mid-40s for the sake of an argument. Yeah. So those in their mid-40s actually understood, and they were the people that we were directly working with when placements happened and all that sort of stuff. So it was a little bit kind of the management of the agency was maybe the next generation up, or maybe even a generation after that.
Yeah.
So it was a very different time.
I mean, we've probably talked about it before, but I think that was a really peculiar time because there was lots of news items in that time about voluntary adoption agencies who perhaps come out of Catholic Care, Church of England Care, yeah. who were kind of going, oh, we will not buy into the same-sex couple kind of new legislation.
That's why there was lawsuits, wasn't there?
Yeah. I mean, literally. So it's really interesting. But I kind of agree with you. And I was thinking, so I see these people online and they're asking a legitimate question and people put what you've said, you know, similar things.
Yeah.
And for me, it's kind of really simple. It's if you want a child quick and you're a cookie cutter family, such a thing, that's an awful way of putting it. Yeah. But if you're a mum and a dad,
kind of, yeah.
You've walked, you've been, then yeah.
Yeah.
Then an RAA may suit you.
Yeah.
But if you're not straight lines, if you've got another child, if you've got health issues, then VAs tend to be much more creative and flexible and you will get that lifetime of service.
That's the thing, you see, it's about that lifetime piece.
Yeah.
That word is quite an important word.
But it doesn't matter at the beginning, does it?
No.
You think,
exactly,
I want
a
child.
Yeah. And I'm going to, you know, I hate to say it, anybody going into adoption, when they first go in the front door, they're always going to think, well, you know, I just need to love this child. And I just, and everything will work out. And, you know, I'm even suspicious now as to the numbers, the percentage of people that get through to panel approved and still think that. I think it's probably less.
You know, I'm on a panel, don't you now?
Yeah, I know.
I've got,
God help them. But I think the percentage is probably less than it was in 2007, 2006, 2007 when we went through the process. But I do wonder if there's still those people who think that, you know, once they're with them, everything's going to be lovely and, you know, they're going to resolve all the trauma and all this.
But is that not human nature?
Well, I think it partly is.
I thought that it will be okay for us. Yeah. That is the folly of youth, isn't it? Yeah. I'll be all right.
Yeah. And it was interesting listening to, I think it was Annalise Sutcora today.
Yeah.
Who was one of the speakers at the event.
Friend of the show.
And she was very open and honest, actually, about the fact that her adoption was always talked about within her family. And, you know, we didn't get time for Q&A at the end, but I was going to ask if she'd ever had any type of therapy or kind of therapeutic interventions over those years.
Ask you in a public forum. Well done, Scott. Nice and sensitive.
I'm not asking her like that.
Have you ever had therapy?
No, I don't mean it like that. Shut up. Because I'd be really interested, because we've always been open, you've always been very open, and I've always been very open about the opportunities to, you know, to access stuff like that with my kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And saying, you know, if, you know.
Whatever you need.
Yeah, whatever you need. Because I do wonder about this openness. You know, the young people who thrive because they are supported in that way. Don't get me wrong, from the science of things today, nothing is perfect, and I know that nothing is perfect.
Yeah.
But, you know, they tend to thrive more if it's more open, talked about, you know, access
it's
to
a more healthy
things
environment,
are there, blah, blah, blah. So that was something that struck me today. And Annalisa, if you're listening, which you probably aren't, but if you are listening, I wasn't going to ask quite that bluntly in public. And please don't answer it in public either.
DM Scott if you need to.
If I ever read it, because I'm not on socials very much these days.
Well, I know. Twitter's died on the vein, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Withered on the vine. Died on the vein.
I'm going to have this dark thing over my profile photo shortly if I don't start to engage.
Really? Is that what happens?
I think they're going to start getting rid of people who don't engage. I'm already, they call it blind something or other. So if you don't tweet enough, I say tweet. If you don't post enough, then you're...
They shuffle
posts
you off.
Yeah, your posts don't get seen by as many people.
Well, that's exciting.
Anyway, yeah.
So I really, there was a lot to think about coming out of today's voluntary adoption agency. I thought there was an element of it. There's a moment of opportunity in the refreshing of their strategy. And the strategy, I think, will come out in May sometime. And so we'll get Satwinder on and we'll get the link to that in the notes and stuff. I thought it was really interesting. And so Andrew... I've forgotten his surname. Andrew, it begins with a W. This is Podcast Gold. His man flicks through a piece of his notes. Andrew Webb. He said, which I thought was quite a bold statement, a great way to start a little thing, was adoption is fading away.
Mm.
And I thought, I think he's right.
That's a really interesting... take on it, actually.
And he's an adult adoptee.
Yeah.
To my knowledge. Yeah, I'm sure he is.
I don't know. I'm sure it's the first time I've ever met him.
All right, I've been in, like, Zoom rooms with him before, or been seen him at events and things.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. And part of the conversation was about them being at the front of the modernisation agenda in terms of... We talked about law change, but I... recently heard a judge said there is no need, there's very limited scope for law change. He talked about identity, which we've talked about ad infinitum, and resources, but I did think that is really interesting. So can I link you into some DfE stats? Because I was at the adoption special guardian. No, I was at the adopter reference group.
You said this already. Crack on, give us the stats.
Does it still sting when I say it?
Yes, it does.
Oh, good. He said, flicking through his notebook.
Is this a notebook that you always used to tell me, yeah, write stuff down, but I never go back to it?
Yeah, well...
I've noticed as well, when you write in pen, you write very little. When you write in pencil, you write a lot. That's a draftsman in you, I think.
I love this pencil. This is Podcast Gold, so I've got a...
He's got a refillable pencil.
It's a retractable pencil.
I'd call it a refillable, because you put the lead in the middle, do you?
Yeah, but you would be wrong. So, as an apprentice, so this is, you couldn't buy things online, and we used to get a catalogue that used to come through the drawing office, and you would tick what you wanted.
Viking Direct or something like that?
No, it wasn't Viking Direct. It was much more, I think it was Draper Direct. I bought, over time I bought, this is really dull podcast gold, but in 1989, I bought a 150mm ruler for £12.
Right. You ruler for £12?
To put that in, it's a scale. You'd call it a scale. To put that in context, my first weekly wage as an apprentice was £45 a week. I bought a ruler for £12.
I was in my second year at high school then.
I know, shut up. But I've still got, this is one of the retractable pencils I bought when I was there. So this
no
is my,
way.
This is my, this is
a antique, man.
It's 0.9 retractable pencil by Pentel. And I've got a 0.5 and a 0.3 and a 0.7.
I bet that's worth a fortune.
And they're different colours, and you put HB lead. I've got my eraser shield. Do you know what an eraser shield is?
No.
So it's a very thin piece of metal that you would put over a drawing, and so you can. It's got cut out different profiles at cutting out of the piece of thin metal, so you can erase very specific parts of a drawing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I really enjoy using a pencil. So anyway, that was a long segue into stats.
That's good.
That's riveting.
What, everybody's going to be thanking me online for getting to know you that little bit more and just how boring you really are.
Yeah, but do you notice I've started to draw as well?
I
thought it was quite plain. Which is all part of aesthetic art, which I'm saving till the end of the year to tell you about.
Do you what? Part of what?
Wait till the end of the year. Okay. Aesthetic.
Aesthetic.
Aesthetic. Ow.
Aesthetic.
Ow.
Aesthetic owl.
Yeah. It's a thing that's been going on behind your back.
Oh,
thank
you.
So quarter three, the adoption sufficiency, we had 1,910 approved adopters. Mm-hmm. We had 2,410 children waiting. Mm-hmm. So that's a gap that's widening.
So when you say children waiting, you mean one, two, three, rather than group of two, that's one, group of three,
individual
that's two.
Children, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah.
So that's a good point.
Yeah, well, these questions have got to be asked, you know? I mean, now that I'm not there, I've got to keep you all on your toes.
But I should go back and ask that question, actually.
Yeah,
can we define that in sibling groups? And they go, it's just one really big sibling group. Well, it could be half a dozen sets of five.
It could, that's the reason I'm bringing
right,
it up.
Okay, so this is, you are like Jeremy Paxman.
Oh, I tell you.
In the flesh, you're much more convincing.
Not better at all.
But I think that, this goes back to Andrew Webb saying, you know, adoption, is adoption fading? Mm. So there was a couple of other things. The family roots research that I posted about that Julie Selwyn's doing, just push that.
Oh, yeah.
People linked that, that's important. Minister, this last few months, met lots of adopted children. And it was interesting because
who is the minister?
Oh, don't be like
no,
that.
No, I'm being genuinely serious.
David Johnson.
Right.
That could you see the club?
Yeah. I mean,
you could literally see me thinking.
So
there.
There's two things there. One is I was deadly serious because I'm not sure who it is anymore.
Yeah.
And then secondly, you can even remember his surname.
I just took a bit of time to draw it back.
It's your age.
So I've got a lot in there to sift through.
Yeah.
There's like a
filing.
It's like a Rolodex. Jinx.
Whatever.
So the minister met the children, and I'm not going to say who it was, one of the parents who'd been at the previous adopt reference group, the minister had come, and he was a bit stiff and a bit,
right.
And she said, but with the children, he was fantastic.
Oh, really?
That was real, really engaging, and really wanted to find out their experience and talk to them, so that was really good.
Yeah.
So Pupil Premium Plus, there's a pilot scheme, so I think we've maybe touched upon that, for children in years 12 and 13, so that's A-level age.
Oh, so they're piloting the extension of it?
Yes.
Oh, fine.
But that doesn't cover adopted children.
No.
Yes.
Shut the front door.
Back the truck up.
Why?
Well, yeah, so, yeah, no. But it's being analysed now to see what the benefits are, but there's optimism that is something that's in the pipeline.
I mean, to be fair, and this is no judgment of any child who's adopted, but surely that would increase engagement in years 12, 13 for adopted children who normally would fall out at GCSE.
Maybe. Yeah.
Do you know, like...
Every little
that's
helps.
That's a ridiculous thing not to include in it.
Yeah. I don't know what the rationale behind that is. Yeah. Wow. Okay. It only includes looked after children at the moment, I think. So it's going to extend to plaque. Yeah. Previously looked after children. That we're in a...
Yeah, we clearly we're in
it's
a...
It's like Piccadilly Circus.
Well, we're near to Houston.
Well, here we are.
Houston Station. So.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, this is posh, isn't it?
It's very posh.
I know we've got fruit
it's a bit
and
too
everything.
Too posh for us.
Yeah. Took it out of the podcast budget. The coffers.
Where have you gotten this budget from?
You don't know. If you submit a form in triplicate, it will be considered by the board.
Do you have to use your special pencil?
Don't touch my pencil. Get your hands off my pencil.
Oh dear, we've gone a bit giddy.
We have gone a bit giddy, yeah. But that's why we don't meet very often.
No, that's probably a better idea.
It is probably, totally.
Maybe it would be more fun if we did meet more often.
Well, maybe we should make a point of that. So over the winter, the three-year rule in terms of who is responsible for post-adoption support, I think we mentioned this, but so historically, once you adopt into your local authority, the local authority that placed your child for adoption is responsible for their adoption support. Is that true? Mm-hmm. Have I got that right?
Well, you're telling me it's about to change from what I can see.
No, I'm not. No. What I'm going to tell you is that there was a consultation because there was questions about whether... And I couldn't quite get to the bottom of this because every adoptive parent I spoke to said, wouldn't it be good if it just transferred immediately to wherever I lived?
Mm.
And that would just cut through it. Yeah. But the Association of Directors of Children's Services, who I think are a... Can we be...
Yeah.
Can we speak plainly?
Well, I don't know, can you? I mean, I can. I've nothing to lose.
You're a man with nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose.
I've got nothing to lose. I've got no beef. I've got no skin in their game.
I'm not about your registration, but...
No, they probably do hold weight of social working rules. But let's lean into it. I think that they were really keen that it just stayed exactly the same.
Yeah. But I get the impression that ACDS, or ADCS, whatever that acronym is...
The ACDC.
Association of Directors... So ADCS.
Yeah.
Do you know what? If there's any ADCS listening, or any member, feel free to come forward and prove me wrong.
Come on the show.
Come on the show. A podcast. Let's
Jinx.
Call it a show.
But we should have put a video up, because that would be good.
That would have been good, wouldn't it?
Maybe. Maybe not.
Anyway, but I get the impression that they just don't like change, because it's a lot of hard work for them.
The bean counters say...
Yeah. And I have it in my head that they're still sitting there smoking their pipes and their cigars in their leather chairs, drinking whiskey of an evening. You know, in those kind of, you know, in the Crown?
Yeah.
When the politicians
Absolutely,
in the 50s, 40s. That's my impression of ADCS.
Well, yeah, and that is really interesting because going back years, and that makes me feel like part of the adoption establishment, whatever that is, the adoption Illuminati.
Illuminati.
Jinx.
Stop saying jinx.
I've been around my kids for too long.
You're not street, you know.
I'm so not street. I remember little things like we were looking at, for example, we have no data on the ethnicity of matches between... Mm. We have maybe local data, but we have no national data. So when you see the adoption certificates, there's no national record of how many, like, transracial adoptions, the ethnicity.
Yeah.
That's not broken down in any kind of detail.
Right. Yeah.
And I remember being in a room where we were... That was on the table, a conversation about what data we collect.
Yeah.
And there was kind of a consensus, but then ADCS spoke up, whoever the latest... And it became just this, like, conversation about... Why do we want that data?
Yeah.
And the amount of effort and energy it's going to take to collect that data. And
which, ironically, CVA used to collect.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Back when, way back when, they were responsible for that data collection.
How do you know that?
Because I was there. So, and I also used to sit, when we lived in Cambridgeshire, I used to sit on the regional... What was Andrew Christie? He was the chair of the ALB. So I sat in the regional ALB for Cambridgeshire.
Oh.
And we had guys from
CBA. Who knew?
But, and it was the same with them, actually. They didn't want to change. They didn't want to you know. And you're sitting
they
there.
They found it irksome to have to change.
Well, yeah. Because I think it's just like, no.
But we really like our form.
Should we leave that to the next generation of, whatever comes on?
Yeah.
Not in this,
But that... It's really interesting, doesn't it? Because I think that when, like, if we were to have a conversation with, it's about similar to that conversation we had last time about change. Mm. So we can, you can have a government that goes, well, this is interesting policy. You can have a groundswell of movement, mm-hmm. but these are people in the middle.
Yeah.
They're the deep state.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is the deep state, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. This is like Korea.
I would imagine that we'll be assassinated.
Well, we've got big windows.
Yeah, we've got big windows. So,
can you see any red lights?
Yeah, we'll get poked with a poisoned brolly on the
if
tube.
If I see a red light, a red pin dot. On your red dot yeah. on your forehead.
I'll get pushed in front of a tube train yeah. by the yeah. ADCS. Yeah. Yeah. That's a terrible thing to say.
Well, it
them.
Is, but yeah, but like I'm saying, that is the impression that you get from them because there doesn't seem to be any want to change anything at that level.
There's a really high bar.
And yet,
for change. If,
I've spoken, you know, over the years, I've spoken to a number of DCSs, and they're all really lovely. They're all really amiable.
Yeah, agreeable.
They're all really kind of, you know, and, you know, one.
Affable.
I've had money from some of them. Not personally. Not personally.
Let's
white envelopes, or brown envelopes, whatever they're called. And they all seem really open to do stuff. But I think as soon as that kind of gravitates to their, whatever it is that they do, I don't know. Like secret
what do they
club?
Do?
Is it like the what's the funny handshake?
People? The Freemasons.
Yeah, it might be.
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe they do meet and have funny handshakes and.
Who knows? But feel free to come along, tell us we're wrong. Come on the show.
Shall we?
Yeah.
Shall we?
Yeah, let's try and get a DCS.
Right, I'll put a note in my.
Or somebody from the ADCS. Who could we get to get us one? Asher, if we just put a. Oh, that was very Irish. Asher. I've been in Ireland way too long.
You have been in Ireland way too long.
Yeah. I was thinking fishing rod out the window. We'll pull one in and.
Maybe we should get Mark Owens on.
Again. Is he even still around? I don't know.
Yeah, he's around. But I think Mark has got real insight.
He does. Yeah, but can he be that person that tells us what's going on?
Yeah, will he speak plainly or will he?
Yeah, because he is. He's. I love Mark. Oh, you know I love Mark. But he has to, you know, they pay his bills, don't they?
So he might speak with less candidly than we would hope. So that is really interesting. I just find it fascinating, isn't it? Because I think people might be coming, listening to the podcast going, oh, I've got a good idea. I'd like to see some change. Yeah. And why don't we just do this? And why don't we just do that? Uh-huh. And again, you just discover that there's these layers of complexity because that even good ideas, we even touched upon at the meeting this week about the NHS numbers.
Yeah, we're back again.
To that. Yeah.
Oh my days! I think in the time that I used to at the DfE before I got sacked, I think we talked about it three times.
Have you mentioned that?
Don't know. May not have done. I think we talked about that three times. Like
I bet it was the first DfE meeting you were at. I bet it was mentioned.
I think it was more or less. I think when we had Ted Timpson
with Govey. You were in...
I was there way before anybody else.
You were there at the beginning.
I was there. But, because I was at that round table with Gove.
Yeah.
With all the other
If the people follow out of the Facebook page, we'd ask for consultation about health. And that had come up again. People going, this kind of disparity between I get adopted, I've got a new number for my child.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that the only reason that it's never been changed is because of the security, as in the policy on NHS numbers.
But is that a political decision?
Yeah. Well, who knows? Because there was never political appetite for it. The last time we talked about it was at the ARG.
Yeah,
was at the ARG. It came up again. And I remember they went away and they said there is no political appetite to change this. So what, it didn't matter what we were saying. I think, but what we were saying was, and it was complicated because we were saying, well, can we just keep the number, but just improve the security around it? And I think that was probably too challenging for them.
I just think it's remarkable to think that anyone who will go to the lengths of getting an NHS number, like a biological parent or some other nefarious character, people who go to those lengths will go to lengths.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they will find a way.
Yeah, but I also think these days, because we've travelled on this thing with adoption, I think actually there should be a choice as well. So if your child would be at risk of something like that happening, then there should be an option.
Risk assess it.
There should be an option. But if there's not, then, and I know I shared this at the ARG when we were talking about it last time, but, you know, for us, with Jacob, we lost all of Jacob's prescriptions, all of his meds, and we had to go through the whole process of getting all those
diagnosis.
Yeah.
So you couldn't...
No, we couldn't get his melatonin, we couldn't get the daytime stuff that he was
taking. Did you have to literally start the process of diagnosis?
No, but it did result in the diagnosis.
Did you literally rock up at a GP and go, this is our son?
We had to go back to CAMS to get them to write, because he had a new NHS number, a new name, all that sort of stuff.
Same kid.
Yeah.
He was here last week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it does bring up this kind of thing about the kind of, you know, stripping them of everything. Them of everything that they...
That medical knowledge.
An 8-year-old's not going to remember their NHS number, but, you know... Fraser and... Fraser and his partner, who obviously had the little baby, the first question they asked was medical history for both of them, and he couldn't answer it.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting issue, isn't it? Because I think you get these cultures within medical about confidentiality. Mm-hmm. And so I maybe told the story, but when I was a student social worker, I was asked to do some investigation around a child's story. And I was like, literally said, he's got this young person had so few details about their early life. So I had to go, and I think I've told you, I must have told you the story about having to go to a shop that wasn't, it was a shop, and in the back of the shop there was a kiosk. And in the kiosk...
Sounds like some sex shop with a sauna
the local
and a massage parlour behind.
Special interest retail park. No, so you were literally, you made a formal request online to the local authority, and then you were told to, like, literally go to a shop. So it was just a normal shop. And I'll not say what shop it was, because people maybe work it out if they know where I am. So you'd go to a shop, and then you kind of go into a shop thinking, well, this is just a shop. Selling whatever they were selling, I think it was cities or something. literally, right? And then I'd go, I'm here to collect, and then go, back of the shop. So you go at the back, it's on all cities, get the, and then there's a little kiosk, and you, like a man just in a kiosk, and you go, I'm here to collect whatever. And he would go, yeah, wait a minute, mate. And he would kind of duck down into like some sort of subterranean and give you the records. But anyway, that's by the by, but that's probably true of a lot of local authorities, that they hide the records, not hide them.
No, well.
But keep them in discreet places. Because, but we were then trying to get information about this child and young person, and I didn't, so I thought really basic stuff like what hospital were you born in? Mm. Like that's the most rudimentary stuff. Yeah. We knew his date of birth, what hospital, what time of day were you born,
those sorts of things
it sort of colours in a black and white picture, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And the doctor wouldn't give it to me.
See, that's...
But they said, I will only give it to you if you get like a letter from the director of children's services, and it was just nonsensical. So there was really high bar to get information, and that is just compounded for adopted children where they've lost their name. And so, like, if you went to where, like, do you know what time of day your children were born?
No.
Do you know what hospital they
were
born in?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. But that time of day is really important to them. They know the day they were born, they know where they were born, but the time, they don't
little things. What was your, do you know their birth weight?
I think so.
Right, yeah. But you want, and I think that just stuff is really important. And it doesn't, in of itself, you can kind of get it, doesn't matter. But it, as a collection of information, it matters. And that's the stuff that you talk about. Like, I remember with my mum, and I know what time of day I was born, and because I know the story about, it was a Sunday afternoon and my dad was at work and we had to get a lift off the man over the road and someone looked, that stuff connects you to a time.
Absolutely.
And place.
And it's something that you would have talked about throughout your childhood.
Yeah.
Whereas, when we've not been through that experience and you're taking them on when they're a certain age, you don't know that.
No. Well, we've been kicked out of our room.
We have, honestly. But we give these people money. Well, you gave them money.
Well, the podcast gave them money.
I'm going to have to check bank accounts.
As always, the pleasure was all yours.
It was all mine. But it's been a pleasure, actually, to sit in the same room.
We must do this
more often.
I think
we're more buzzy when we're together.
Bit fizzy.
But I think we say that every time, and then... It's been a year and a bit.
It has been a year and a bit.
So, okay, we need to sort our stuff out. Really.
God bless you, Scott, Catherine, Bon Jovi.
Anjovi.